So really, if you are involved in sustainability reporting, ESG reporting, absolutely relevant. But if you're involved in internal audit, even SOX, and definitely enterprise risk management, this is probably already on your radar. It's something to definitely be tuned into.
This episode is brought to you by Green Skies Analytics, an audit analytics service provider that works with internal audit departments that have data analysts and are still frustrated with trying to make analytics actually work, aren't getting the expected ROI, who can't break through the communication barrier between the analysts and the audit team, and those that need experienced direction for an audit analytics strategy and process. Those that feel like they've wasted time and money on trainings, aren't getting the value they want, not prioritizing the highest risk areas for the organizations, or have projects that seemingly never get completed. Do you deal with any of that? If you do, go to the show notes of this episode and click the Green Skies Analytics link, or go to greenskiesanalytics.com to schedule a call and understand how Green Skies Analytics makes analytics actually work for internal audit.
Hey, everybody. Before we get into the content, just a quick note. Late last week on Friday, it came out that the SEC is pausing the climate disclosure rule for now. Basically, as probably expected, a bunch of lawyers went, hey, we don't want to do this, and our organization doesn't want to do this, and so we're going to fight you over it. Especially considering how politically charged something like ESG is, it probably shouldn't be a huge surprise that happened. It's probably more surprising that it didn't happen sooner. So in talking to, doing a kind of a quick poll of experts and calling people up and kind of getting their opinion, the overall belief is this isn't a matter of if, but when. This will go into place, and so all the content that we talk about is still very much applicable, but just wanted to provide a quick update on where it currently stands. All right, let's do the intro or something like that now. See you. Hello, everybody. I am Trent Russell, and this is the Audit Podcast. Today on the show, we have Judson Aiken. He's the head of risk and ESG solutions at Audit Board. With the SEC climate-related disclosure rules coming out just a few weeks ago, and it being here, it's actually here after all these years, I want to make sure that we add the ESG expert on the show, and Judson is absolutely the first person that popped into my mind. So again, now that it's actually here, we're going to talk about who does this actually impact, what companies are, what they're doing already, and where they are on the various levels on the maturity scale, audit's role specifically from we have not done anything yet, what are we supposed to be doing now, all the way up to the more advanced or the folks that are higher up on the maturity model. What they should be doing. You might have noticed that the S isn't really mentioned a ton. And so we talked to Judson about, all right, we've been talking ESG for all these years. What happened to the S part? It's very much there and alive. So make sure you listen to that part. The timeline for all this, when is it going live? Where do we need to be at this point in time and at this point in the future? Where do we need to be on that maturity level? Last thing I want to mention, there is the SEC climate-related disclosure rules, what you need to do now, ebook. So this is probably a pretty good go-to source for all of your ESG questions, especially if you miss something in the episode, say you're in your car, whatever, on a jog, don't have time to take a note. A lot of this conversation is from these guidelines or this guidance that was provided. And so there's a link to those in the show notes. I think between the audio and the ebook, you're going to be pretty well covered as far as knowing where you need to be and what you need to be doing next relative to, I'll just say ESG. With that said, here we go. All right. So what is in your, either your internet browsing history or your ChatGPT or whatever other LLM you might be using? What's in that history? What have you been looking at recently?
Yeah, good question. So I actually don't, I'll be honest, I don't use ChatGPT a whole lot.
All right, we're going to cancel this episode.
But I think I was telling you, I am getting married in a couple of weeks, so I'd be lying if I wasn't using it to polish up some of the wedding speeches.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, that's so good. So who should be, this is like the ESG episode based on the announcement that came out a few weeks ago. So who should be listening to this episode?
Yeah, I would say, I know the audience is primarily, audit, risk and compliance, heavily focused on audit. So what we have seen is as, ESG reporting has matured, the more mature organizations are having a lot more interaction between their ESG and sustainability teams with their second and third line. So really, if you are involved in sustainability reporting, ESG reporting, absolutely relevant. But if you're involved in internal audit, even SOX, and definitely enterprise risk management, this is probably already on your radar. It's something to definitely be tuned into.
Okay.
Yeah.
You mentioned maturity for, and there's everyone's on obviously different levels, as is the case with every initiative. But like the companies, what are they doing already relative to, without going to like a full-on breakdown of this is maturity model 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Generally, what are people doing at various levels of their maturity relative to this?
Yeah, definitely. So we Audit4 did a maturity benchmarking study last year. We're going to refresh it for 2024, so I won't go through all of the findings, but the gist of it is, the last couple of years we have seen ESG reporting go from voluntary to mandatory. The biggest probably finding we identified when it comes to maturity is based on industry. And so there are industries that have been reporting on this stuff for 10 years. Transportation, oil and gas, manufacturing, retail. So their teams are much more mature. They've already been collecting this data. They already have systems and processes in place. Technology, maybe healthcare, financial services, media and entertainment. I think a lot less, I don't want to say scrutiny, but they just haven't had to report this data in the past. So understandably, maybe a little bit earlier in their maturity journey. I think what we're seeing in the earlier stages is teams being much more reactive to ESG data requests. So if an investor or a customer reaches out to your company and says, "Hey, can you provide us this data about your company?" It's a little bit reactive. So they'll go and they'll find the data and they'll respond. As you move up that scale, it's a lot more proactive. You have systems in place, you have processes, you have teams, you have dedicated headcount who's responsible for collecting the data, reviewing it, making sure it's audit ready. That's kind of on the very high end of maturity. Internal audits really checked in. You've got controls in place that have been identified, sometimes even tested. And then the other big thing that we notice as you do go up that maturity scale is, once you're 3 or 4 years in, you've had 3 or 4 reporting cycles under your belt. You're kind of comfortable with the external reporting side of it, and you're spending a whole lot more time on internal KPI reporting. The biggest organization in the world, they're good with their financial reporting. They have to keep their employees up to date. Hey, we've made all these great claims to the market. How are we doing against all these great statements that we've made? So we're seeing a lot of that.
Got it. And so for, would you recommend, I mean, it seems like it would make sense to me, if you're in an industry that probably historically hasn't had a focus on this, hit up some of your peers in those industries that have, the audit folks especially, obviously if you're in internal audit. I mean, if nothing else, what are the expectations on this? Like, what kind of requests have you typically gotten in the past or things like that? Is that a good place to start? I know most internal audit departments are resource strapped, and so I know a lot of folks need to leverage their network to at least kick these sorts of initiatives off.
I mean, benchmarking is a huge part of it. I think that the good thing is something like 98% of the S&P 500 has issued an ESG report in the last 2 years. And so there's a lot of content you can go and just look at their report. Hey, which frameworks are they aligned against? SASB, TCFD, GRI, CDP, those are some of the big ones. But look at your peers and say, hey, what are our peers doing? There's some scoping kind of baked into this, which is called the materiality assessment. CSRD has a double materiality assessment. The whole point of that is really similar to a risk assessment where you are identifying what is material for my company. What should I be disclosing on? A big part of that is surveying all your stakeholders. So internal stakeholders, employees, executives, external stakeholders like customers, investors, community members. I think what we see ESG teams doing and larger companies doing is say, hey, who are our stakeholders and what do they care about? What do they want us to be reporting on? Let's make sure we're meeting our stakeholders' expectations.
I was curious because as I was reading about the climate-related disclosure, the S part of ESG wasn't really in there. And so you're saying that with CSRD, like that's where you would expect to see more of that? Or provide, maybe a better question to ask is provide a little bit of clarity on, okay, there's the ESG. It seems like for the announcement that came out a couple of weeks ago, it's all E. Obviously, you have to have the G for the E, but then where does the S kind of stand in there?
Yeah, and then now we're eating alphabet soup. So I would say, going back to the initial disclosure, the initial drafts of the SEC's disclosure, it never had any human capital components related to it. It was always kind of climate risk reporting. And it has changed the final release, but that part has not changed. So the latest recent SEC announcement is really specifically focused on climate risk management. What are the material climate-related risks that, can materially affect my company's strategy and operations? What are the material capital expenditures that we've had to incur based on severe climate events, that sort of thing? Now, the SEC's announcement does point to TCFD. TCFD has interoperability statements with SASB, and all of these actual foundational frameworks do have components of human capital reporting. So a lot of companies are already reporting on that data anyway.
Got it. Okay. And what about in this, the role of internal audit? This is the audit podcast. I mean, compliance risk management listens to this also, but what is audit's role? I feel like that's a question that a lot of folks who maybe don't have a ton of experience in this are going, what, how's this going to impact me? Everybody says it's like SOX, but what's their role? And what have you seen audit do so far from kind of like the beginner folks, like, hey, we're just kind of dipping our toe in the sand on this, to the more, I guess we could say, mature.
Sure. Yeah. So I would say a few different things. When I talk to chief audit executives on the at the very, very earliest stages of maturity, you've got CAEs who are putting on the hat of ESG reporting. So you have some companies where the head of audit is the one actually gathering all the data and supporting their company's first ever report. As quickly as possible, the auditor wants to get some arm's length and not be the one actually reporting all the data. They want to be auditing it. When I talk to audit leaders who are, who over the last 2 or 3 years, what they've been doing is ESG readiness assessments. So when they've identified, like, this is coming, we know it's coming, we got to go get a few audits under our belt to identify issues and findings and things like that. They're doing ESG readiness assessments in those areas where, they know they're going to have to go collect data from a part of the business where they've never collected data from. We're also seeing on the other end, I've talked to a few audit leaders who are layering in ESG questions to every single kickoff meeting. The thought process is you're already out there in the business, you're already talking to these folks. Layer in 2 or 3 questions that you know are going to be relevant for some of the data collection that is going to come downstream. The last thing I'll say is full-blown ESG audits. So you've got a financial reporting team or an ESG team, sustainability team, who has released a report or is about to release a report. This is kind of the horror story, but I was talking with one team where, they're 2 months out from publishing or a month out from publishing. They hand the report over to audit. Audit says, you can't publish 40% of these metrics because we can't tie any of the data out. So it's one of those things where it's very real. And if your peer over here is publishing all that data, you're playing some catch up. So,
Yeah. Okay. And
yeah.
I'm assuming this is a scenario where it sounds like, I'm guessing, internal audit wasn't part of any kind of readiness assessment.
That's right.
Okay.
That's
So, first
right.
step, if you're like, this is brand new, I got to figure out what to do for audit, would be a readiness assessment. I know we can't give that advice to literally everyone. And the answer to every audit question is always, it depends. But by and large, like, obviously, do your own research and understand it. But pretty decent place to start, depending on where you are, if you're at the very beginning.
Yeah, and there's something I can add as well. I was listening to I was at a conference and I heard a chief risk officer who was also the head of ESG for a very, very large multinational basically give some good advice that said, if you're just getting started, go identify which process that you think is your most mature process and go audit the heck out of that and identify all the findings so you have a North Star that all the rest of your processes can align to. So don't boil the ocean. Don't go try to do everything. Maybe you have good data around your supply chain. Maybe you have good data around human capital. Some of this stuff is a little bit easier to collect. So audit those processes, build, COSO released the internal control over sustainability reporting framework. It's identical to ICFR. But use that and build a good process. That becomes sort of the benchmark for the rest of your company.
Got it. Okay. And then kind of continuing along that line of thought, what's the timeline here? Who needs to be ready by when, and what does that look like?
Yeah, definitely. So I won't go through all of the release timelines of the SEC. They have kind of a nice chart, but the gist of it is large accelerated filers are 2025 or the fiscal year starting in calendar year 2025. That's when they have to start reporting on all of the climate risk disclosures. There's a 1 year delay for carbon accounting for all the GHG, scope one and two disclosures, and that's next year. So anybody who's been around for Sarbanes-Oxley knows it takes 3 or 4 reporting cycles to kind of work out the kinks and identify all the findings. So if you are a large accelerated filer, I think, this isn't a surprise to anybody, to be honest. I think EY shared that 50% of the Fortune 100 already have an ESG controller, meaning they have got a dedicated headcount who is purely responsible for ESG data management, framework alignment, assurance, that sort of thing. I can also go into kind of the difference between an ESG controller and a chief sustainability officer because they're actually very different, but yeah.
Yeah, let's hit on that. And then also, I'm going to tack on something else to that. What's the typical background of an ESG controller? I don't know if that's your area of expertise. If not, that's fine. But hey, we need to go get one of these. Who are they? What's their background?
Yeah, definitely. And this is kind of an emerging role, I would say. The ESG controller is somebody like you and me. It's an auditor or a compliance professional by nature. The chief sustainability officer is an environmental scientist. They're the ones implementing decarbonization strategies for a company. The ESG controller is responsible for data governance, for auditability, for framework coverage, all of that stuff. That's kind of our bread and butter. These are the folks that we're seeing kind of escalated or elevated into that controller position.
All right, so I always like to look at things from a people, process, technology perspective, and we kind of just hit on the people side. So from the technology side, like if I am a SOX auditor and I have my SOX software that I use to help facilitate those audit procedures, do I really need an ESG one? Can I leverage what I have from SOX? Like, what's the differences there?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think the best way to answer is to think about like upstream and downstream. So the nature of SOX is testing controls that have already happened. So you're not really using your SOX software to perform SOX controls. With ESG and ESG program management, the way we're seeing this sort of software space matures into a couple buckets. You've got all of your kind of source systems, carbon accounting tools, HR, operational data. These would be all the down, or I would say upstream kind of sources for all the data. ESG program management at the end of the day is metric collection. So you've got, the way ESG practitioners would use it is you've got to organize all of the metrics that you're collecting, whether they're quantitative or qualitative. You've got owners throughout your business. So you got to send out these data requests, get the data back. Make sure that there's supporting evidence to back up all that data, and then map those metrics out to all the relevant reporting frameworks. That happens kind of, that is all the ESG team's responsibility. The second line of defense, kind of the control component of this, is saying, okay, well, you collected data from your HR system. What ITGCs do you have in place that have been tested for design and operating effectiveness in your HR tool? That's a control that
Yeah.
needs to be documented and tested.
Got it.
So kind of two different workflows. Obviously, there's overlap, but a little bit different in nature.
Got it. Okay. And we've said SOX probably as much as we've said ESG during this episode. And there's been a lot of comparisons, at least at a high level, to say SOX, ESG is going to have a similar impact. But what's your guess on that? Are you seeing that already where it's like, nope, this is like SOX 2.0 for internal audit profession?
Yeah, I would say the US perspective is slightly different than a more global perspective. In the US, there's about 4,000 public companies. So large accelerated filers will be subject to this. So, in some ways, yes. In some ways, CSRD is much, much bigger than that. We're talking 50,000 companies with very, very robust, disclosure requirements. So, I think it's tough to say, is this SOX 2.0? I think it's similar in many respects where the goal is very similar. I think the purpose of SOX is to give confidence to the investment community that all of these financial metrics that you're reporting are have been audited and they're real.
Yeah.
Same thing goes with all of this sort of non-financial
Yeah,
data.
yeah,
Well, yeah.
yeah. Okay. And then what about for like climate risk management as part of ERM? So for our ERM folks out there, what's the impact there? I think you hit on it a little bit just a second ago, but maybe in a little bit more detail.
That's a really, really good question. So the final SEC ruling really, really heavily focuses on climate risk disclosures. That's the nature of the actual ruling. And there is a provision in the final ruling that requires you as a company to disclose how your executive team is managing climate risks as part of a broader enterprise risk management program. So it's no different than enterprise risk management in many ways. You know, what are the risks? What's the impact? What's the likelihood? What's the, you know, causes and consequences and all of that? So it's very, very similar. And, you know, to maybe give a little bit of hope for folks doing this, I think we're not starting from scratch. The teams that I'm talking with, there's so much collaboration happening with their SOX audit and risk counterparts. Because these processes have been matured, they've been tested, they've been refined. And so we're seeing a ton of collaboration where, you know, the risk team can give guidance to these ESG climate risk managers. The SOX team can give guidance to the ICSR, you know, managers, that sort of thing. So there's a lot of lessons learned from the last 20 years that are kind of being baked into the ESG game.
So you've mentioned, obviously, Fortune 500, multinational, like these huge corporations are pretty kind of good to go. They've seen this coming. They've been equipped. They have the resources. What about private companies or even maybe the smaller ones, if we say it like that?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. So the conversations we've been having with private companies, to be honest, the situation that they're in is that if you're a private company, your initial reaction might be, well, hey, I'm not public, so this isn't relevant. That's completely not the case. If your biggest customer is a public company, it's very likely that they are asking or going to be asking you questions that you need to be ready to answer. And this has already played out. You know, when we talk to kind of our mid-market customers or even private customers, they're reaching out to us asking for guidance. Hey, we are spending more and more time answering supplier questionnaires. Do you have anything that can help us organize all the data to make it a lot faster to answer these questions? So it is very real, and it almost comes down to a competitive advantage. If you're a smaller company and you're looking, you know, you and all of your peers are trying to earn the business of Walmart or Apple or whoever it is, you got to be ready and you got to kind of stand out amongst your peers. And this is one way that we're seeing companies make some investments who are maybe a little bit smaller.
Again, because it's the audit podcast, we talked about if you're kind of starting from scratch, readiness assessment's a really good place in all likelihood to start. But then what's next? And then maybe what's next after that? And I think you've hit it, but explicitly like state that. And again, this is an opinion, so hardly recommend anyone going, hey, board, Judson said this. We heard it on some podcast, and so that's why we're doing it. Do some due diligence here. But from your, I would say, rather expert opinion, what do you think about that?
Yeah, sure. So I would say, you know, again, the earliest stages, we're seeing ESG readiness assessment. So how mature is this process or business unit or subsidiary in terms of being able to provide us audit-ready data when we ask for it? The next phase is getting into pre-audits of an entire ESG report. So data tie-outs. We've worked together to build a process. Here's the final draft or the second, you know, the penultimate draft. You know, for this draft, go ahead and do a data tie-out. The other piece that we haven't discussed is the assurance requirements. So the SEC's final ruling has assurance requirements for, I think, starting 2029 for large accelerator filers for their GHG data.
I just wanted to make sure the audience had some, okay, this is where we are, this is our likely next step, or this is where we are and this is our likely next step, or we're at the very beginning and we want to know future state, what this is going to entail from resources and budgeting and all that kind of good stuff, what the, I don't want to say lift, I hate saying that, but what the lift is going to be. So anyway, yeah, I think you nailed it. And I mean, the overall reason I wanted to have you come on was to basically share with internal audit professionals and other risk folks, like, okay, it's out, it's here now. What do we do? What's the expectation? I think we've absolutely crushed that. So with that said, if there was anything, though, that we didn't hit on that you said, hey, I'm coming on this podcast, I want to make sure to get this message across, anything you want to leave the audience with, I'll give you the floor to close us out.
Yeah, just, I mean, on this topic specifically, I think, you know, One thing I will say too is that if you're just getting started, the best place to start is with TCFD. And we probably should have covered this a little bit more earlier, but the SEC has pointed directly and mentioned by name TCFD as one of the sort of foundational frameworks that it is leaning on. TCFD has been around for a long time. It is a very mature reporting framework that has 11 recommended disclosures. And so a lot of companies have already been doing this, but there's a ton of implementation guidance. So if you go to TCFD's website, you look up how do we actually roll out TCFD disclosures, there's a ton of good resources out there for you to look at.
Hey, everyone. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Audit Podcast. Whatever platform you're listening on right now, I'm sure there's a subscribe button somewhere, so please hit the subscribe button there. If you're listening through iTunes or Spotify, feel free to go give us that 5-star rating. It only took me about 16 seconds to give myself a 5-star review, and it really helps to get future guests to come on the show, so we'd really appreciate that. Lastly, be sure to check out the show notes and follow us on all our social media channels on Instagram, on LinkedIn, and on TikTok. Also, if interested, please sign up for our weekly newsletter from The Audit Podcast. Thank you all. Have a great one.